Welcome to another episode of the Oncology On The Go podcast. I'm your host, Roman Fabricator. In this episode, Cancer Network's Arianna Pelosi and Cure's Brielle Bennion spoke with Samantha Shenoy, a nurse practitioner from the University of California, San Francisco Health, about the role she plays when treating patients with multiple myeloma undergoing treatment with talquetamab. Specifically, she outlined the importance of nurse-provider communication, identified common adverse effects associated with the drug, as well as cytokine release syndrome treatment and prevention measures. Furthermore, Shenoy stressed response optimization and toxicity mitigation through incremental dose reduction, as well as educational and support measures to patients experiencing oral and dermatologic adverse events.
Talking about our oncology nurses, what is the role of the oncology nurse during talquetamab treatment, and why is this patient, nurse, provider, communication, you know, everybody involved, why is that so essential during this treatment process?
Yeah, so there's an inpatient component and outpatient component. So, you know, the patients first receive step-up dosing in the hospital. And during that time, the bedside nurses are critical in monitoring these patients for signs and symptoms of CRS or potential neurotoxicity. So starting off there, they're critical in that regard. And then with talquetamab specifically, because we know it has these very unique GPRC5D related adverse events, nurses can be essential in identifying patients who might be at higher risk of weight loss. So for example, in my experience, patients can start to have dry mouth and some taste changes, even during step-up dosing in the hospital. So nurses can play a really key role in communicating to a provider, hey, I think this would be a patient who would really benefit from seeing nutrition, or, you know, because they're right there at the bedside. And so identifying those patients, right? You know, I think I mentioned to Brielle, I have a handout that I made for our patients. And so nurses can be, you know, helpful in going over that handout with patients, because one of the things that we like to do at UCSF is educate patients before they even, you know, while they're in the hospital getting step-up dosing. Ideally, we educate them before that happens, but if they haven't gotten that education, nurses are crucial in spending time with them talking about the different ways they can manage some of the adverse events. And in terms of communication with a provider, I think relaying, obviously, if they have CRS, any signs of neurotoxicity, and in terms of anything related to weight loss, et cetera, patients who are high risk for weight loss. In the clinic, after they've been discharged, after step-up dosing, that's generally when within, you know, there's some side effects that generally happen around cycle two. So some dry skin, nail changes, those kind of things. Nurses will actually have come to me and said, hey, Sam, you know, I'm seeing this patient and for whatever reason, I haven't met yet. But it's really important at that point, because you can see these side effects from talquetamab that aren't immediate, that they let the provider know, hey, they're struggling with their hands peeling, or they're struggling with taste changes. So in the same way they do that inpatient, they can do that outpatient too. I mean, our nurses are fantastic, and they've definitely, you know, I think just bringing it to the provider awareness about patients who are really struggling with some of the taste changes, the swallowing, et cetera. So
you did just touch upon a few different adverse effects. So what are some of the most commonly associated with talquetamab treatment, and how are they managed?
So I really think of talquetamab side effects sort of branched into two categories. So there's oral, and then there's dermatologic. So in terms of oral, there's taste changes, dry mouth, and sometimes difficulty swallowing. And also patients will complain, especially in the first cycle, that their mouth is sore. And so things like spicy food, citrus can really irritate it. In terms of dermatologic adverse events, some of the main things we can see are skin rashes. Usually that's in the first cycle. Palmar plantar desquamation. So can be pretty extreme peeling of the hands and the palms of the hands and the soles of the feet. And then also nail changes. So patients can have nail ridging. Their nails most patients, their nails at some point do fall off. There can be separation of the nail plate from the nail bed. So onychomedesis, where you can imagine that if your nail starting to separate the nail plate from the nail bed as you're trying to comb your hair or wearing a wool sweater, your nails are getting caught on that. So that can be challenging for patients as well. Those are the main things that I think about with talquetamab. And the skin toxicities are pretty manageable. Forgot to mention just extremely dry skin. I would say, though, of all those, the one that's the most challenging in terms of quality of life is the taste changes. And it's a really broad spectrum. So some patients completely lose their taste. Some patients, they can only taste sweet things, or for some patients, some things just taste, everything tastes bitter, or things just taste salty. So it is challenging, and it can last for several weeks. And I think I mentioned dry mouth as well. That can actually be a big one that people don't always talk about, but that can be really difficult for patients, especially at night when they're trying to sleep. I've had patients who've had trouble sleeping because their mouth is so dry.
Let's talk a little bit about cytokine release syndrome. How is this managed, and what kind of protocols does your institution have to prevent or treat severe CRS?
Yeah, so we have a protocol that we've adopted for bispecific antibodies specifically at our institution, where we follow for grade 1 through 4 CRS. We have different interventions. So at our institution, with the first sign of CRS, it's generally fever. Fever is a cardinal sign. We actually give Tylenol and tocilizumab with first fever. And if a patient has a second fever, we'll give them steroids, so dexamethasone. So we like to, address it pretty quickly. If someone's having associated hypotension, we'll give them fluids, and other, and basically any other supportive care for any other signs or symptoms of CRS. But we're pretty aggressive in terms of giving tocilizumab with the first fever, and along with Tylenol, and again, steroids with second fever. And we follow this grading system, so it's a standard thing. There's a chart, and we follow that pretty closely. And it will ex outline, okay, if it's grade 2, what are interventions, grade 3, et cetera, et cetera. But because we nip it in the bud so quickly, usually it's not an issue.
That's great. I know a lot of the discussions sometimes are, do you wait for grade 1 or grade 2 and kind of when to treat that? And it varies from institution to institution. You may have touched upon this previously, but are there any neurological effects that are associated with talquetamab treatment?
There can be, but I mean, I personally haven't seen it. I know you obviously it's a bispecific antibody, so neurotoxicity has occurred and can occur, but it's such a small percentage of patients. And we at our institution, as I'm sure is similar to other institutions, do ICE scores every 12 hours. And that's another role that nurses play a key role in, doing those ICE scores with patients and watching them very closely. Yes, it can occur. Is it an issue? Generally not with bispecifics. Very small percentage of patients experience neurotoxicity.
And are there any guidelines or monitoring parameters that patients and clinicians should abide by when going through this treatment?
As with any other bispecific, we're looking at labs, vital signs. We're keeping our eye out for any neutropenia, any cytopenias, basically. Which generally, if we do see that, it's going to be in the first cycle, and then over time that gets better. I'd say the biggest difference with talquetamab that we're really looking out for, a huge thing we want to keep our eye out for that's different from other bispecifics, is the degree of taste changes and weight loss, actually. And so that's where I would say it's very different from teclistamab or elranatamab, for example. Any BCMA-targeted bispecific is that because of these GPRC5D-related adverse events, I'd say we really are paying attention in terms of numbers and data. It's weight loss, and then, I mean, these are monitoring parameters. I definitely ask my patients, check in with them about how much they're eating, those kind of things. Dermatologic skin toxicities, nail skin, it's pretty manageable. The oral, where we want to be careful is we want to make sure someone's not having profound weight loss, and that's really the parameter I'd say for talc. I mean, people might have taste changes, but the question for me is always, are you losing weight? Is it getting to the point where it's a concerning amount of weight loss?
Just kind of going off your last answer, this wasn't on our list of questions, but I know some clinicians that I've spoken with have tried different methods on how to kind of beat those taste changes. I'm not sure if you've tried any or have any methods on how to go about that at all.
I was very lucky in that I've worked with some great dietitians, and very early on, so I saw patients on study almost 4 years ago now, and I had some great dietitians that worked with my patients and gave me a lot of the tips that are now in my handout, which I think you guys have probably seen. I've heard of other people using some prophylactic measures or attempting prophylactic measures. Our institution specifically, we really just worked with patients to find different techniques to address the different taste changes or dry mouth. So, for example, if a patient was saying, you know, something tastes salty or sweet, you know, we have different recommendations for all the different taste alterations. If something's bitter, if they had really dry mouth, because really, if your mouth is dry, you're not going to be able to taste very well. So, you know, that's something I really learned throughout this process is we really have to address the dry mouth because without saliva, you're not going to be able to, you know, if our mouth's dry, you're not going to be able to taste very well. So, really coming up with interventions for that. So, dry mouth lozenges, tart candies such as lemon, citrus. You know, really good hydration. There's a lot of dry mouth melts, as you've probably all heard of, xylene melts, et cetera. People have asked me, you know, should I be consulting nutrition and everyone? And that seems like a lot. And I said, absolutely not, because the patients that I feel like that's most important for the patients who are at high risk of weight loss, I do think from the very beginning, they should be teamed up with a nutritionist. Otherwise, I'd say the best next line of defense is to give them a really good handout. And that's what we've done. From everything that I learned when I was working with these patients on trial, I put together everything that I learned onto this handout and then my personal experience, because patients would come in and tell me, you know what, Sam, this really worked for me. And then I would add that. So I think one of the best things you can do is give this to patients ahead of time. I think that's the key, because if they know what to expect, I mean, I would want to know, okay, if I'm going to, you know, have this drug, this is what I expect. I don't want to be surprised. And what can I do? So, you know, one of the recommendations is have things that if something, for example, tastes like cardboard, have certain spices, et cetera, at hand when you're eating at the table or things you can add to it. So I think that really helps empower patients. Okay, I can have all this ready to go. So then when this happens, I'll be ready to address some of the challenges that are associated with this treatment. So no, I don't have any magic bullet. But I do think if you can educate patients before they've even started, they have the tools that they need. And then if, you know, and I spend time going through the handout with them and all, and I really try to tease out what is the taste alteration? Is it because people just say, oh, either it's like, I don't taste anything. It's like, oh, everything tastes bitter or, and really understanding what that is and then work targeting your interventions towards that. So on my handout, I have if something tastes too salty, this is what you can do. If it tastes metallic or bitter, this is what you can do. And I found that patients have really appreciated that. I spoke with this woman who'd worked with, her name's Rebecca Katz, worked with patients with cancer for years who've had taste alterations, et cetera. And something that I really learned from her was, you know, really focusing on food presentation. We often miss, you know, how important that can be. So I know when I go to a restaurant and something looks good, my mouth starts to water, I want to eat it because it's just plated really well. It looks beautiful, right? And so one of the things she said is I really talk to patients about making each meal an event. So, you know, choosing your nicest dishes, laying it out, making it an event, putting garnishes on the side, doing things that make you want to eat the food. Also, when you don't want to eat and don't have an appetite, don't put a big plate of food in front of you. Just do small amounts so that it doesn't feel overwhelming. And another really cool tip I learned from her is when you can't taste as well, texture takes on a whole new level of importance. So, for example, think about adding nuts. So, if you like crunchy, so even if you can't taste as well, if things taste crunchy and that can bring some satisfaction to the eating experience, or putting creamy peanut butter on celery sticks and things that if you can't taste as well, texture adds some enjoyment. So there's all these little tips you can, you know, food presentation, thinking about texture that can help with the whole eating experience.
No, that's great. I always like to ask. I was speaking to Dr. Josh Richter once, and he said he recommends an Oreo cookie before trying a meal. So
That's a
I always like
great
to ask
idea.
for different answers there.
Yeah.
So, to your knowledge, is talcanumab associated with any specific drug interactions?
Not to my knowledge, no, not that I'm aware of. I'm sure one day I might hear about something, but I have not heard about that.
So I do have a follow-up that's not on the list, but you talked a lot about patients who are at risk for weight loss or significant weight loss. What kind of characteristics do these patients have, or what are you looking for that makes you and your team say, like, hey, this person is at risk for significant weight loss?
I would just say patients who are thin to start off with. I mean, they already have a low BMI. Some people I just know really well and they've always struggled with their weight, or they just, for whatever reason, their appetite is not great to start off with. So it's really just based on BMI that we make that determination. And other than that, yeah, I mean that's really the main thing. There's no other drug like this in myeloma, but there are drugs such as selinexor that can cause a lot of nausea, et cetera. So if I know that they've struggled, weight's been an issue with them in the past already, then those are the kind of patients I would think about.
Noted. Thank you. And so, where do you see this agent headed in the future?
Talquetamab is an excellent agent, and what I try to tell patients from the very beginning is I talk to them about the efficacy of the drug because it's very impressive. On trial, a lot of these patients had already, they'd had a BCMA targeted agent, they'd had a lot of several lines of therapy already. I had a patient who'd been living with myeloma for 20 years. And she's been on this drug for now, it's been about 3 years that she's been on this drug. So when you think about that's pretty impressive. I do think that combinations are the wave of the future. As you know, myeloma is all about combining drugs. And so in the trial, one of the trials that I was on specifically was the TRIM2 trial, where you combine talquetamab with daratumumab. And so I feel like that's the wave of the future. Monotherapy and soon is going to be old news, and we're going to start to combine these drugs. I think that's really the wave of the future to help improve PFS, et cetera. Yeah, I really think that's the best way to use these drugs, combo therapies.
So I think we touched on a lot of really great points today. Is there anything else that you'd want to highlight from our discussion, or maybe we didn't touch upon?
No, I think I really feel passionately about it because I have seen when you as a clinician see patients who've been on these who've had many lines of therapy and are now getting 3, 4, 5 years out of a drug and still going. I really feel passionately about the fact that if we can just educate patients who are struggling at the beginning, that hey, just hang in there, it's not going to last forever. I think that is so critical to say. I totally understand. It is so frustrating. Well, actually, I don't understand. I'm not in your shoes, but I can imagine how frustrating it is not to be able to taste and your mouth is dry and your hands are peeling, but just to know that that's not forever. There is a light at the end of the tunnel because I've had several patients say, Sam, is this going to last forever? Am I going to ever get my taste back? Are my hands always going to be peeling? My answer is always no. And I recently did a support group for myeloma patients, and I had two patients, one who'd been on the drug for almost 4 years, and then a patient who's at the very beginning. And I to the patient who'd been on it for 3 to 4 years, I said, share your experience so that people know that now you're skiing every weekend, your taste is 100%. You're not, you might have some dry skin, but other than that, you're thriving and you're living your life. So I think that's the last thing that I want to say is that these GPRC5D associated side effects are not forever. And if we can really manage, use these tools, give them a handout ahead of time, educate them beforehand, and continuing education about things that they can do to make it through. It's a drug that it has really good efficacy, and it's something that, is prolonging people's lives. I mean, I had patients who came on a trial and they had nothing left. And now they got, 4 years and they're still going. So, I mean, my personal experience with that is, if we can just, I think you get my point. Just educate them that the side effects are not forever, because I think if someone is not aware of that, and sometimes we just forget about that as providers, we just say, okay, these are some things you can do. But I think if you miss that key sentence that, hey, it's not going to last forever, I think as a patient, they're like, okay, the first few months are going to be tough, but if I can get through that, and also the one last, I didn't say this, but we do Q2 week dosing. So after the step up dosing, we go to every 2 weeks, which a lot of people are doing. And with Dr. Chari's, all know Ash's data that, once someone's achieved a response, we see that the drug is still efficacious and patients have a decrease in side effects when we move the drug, when we change it from every 2 weeks to monthly. And I think that's another thing I discuss. So, hey, this is a really good drug. Once you show a response at a certain point, perhaps 4 cycles in, we can move it from every 2 weeks to monthly. That's pretty good for myeloma treatment once a month. So I also talk to them about that at some point we can spread this out so that you're now getting the drug once a month instead of every 2 weeks. And patients, that's very appealing to patients who've been, spending their lives coming in, getting treatments every week or every 2 weeks that, hey, we can get you to a point where we know that this drug still shows efficacy even when we give it less frequently. So that's really important too.
All right. Thank you so much.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcast. The Oncology on the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.